the Kentucky Derby, and wasting no time, it is Sinister Minister, and Sharp Humor comes on through in between horses. Toward the outside, Bluegrass Cat is there, keyed entry toward the rail, and here's that cavalry charge by us for the first time, and it's Sinister Minister, and keyed entry comes through on his inside. Sharp Humor runs third as they head for the turn, showing up as fourth, Barbaro's fifth in between horses. Moiron is sixth. Seaside Retreat is seventh. Brother Derek, well out into the track. He's now running along in ninth position. AP Warrior is 10th. Point Determined is 11th toward the inside. Sweet Northern Saint, the favorite, is 12th and moving through in between horses. Bob and John is now 13th. Deputy Glitters is 14th. Private Bob, 15th. Stephen Wolfer, 16th toward the inside. Flashy Bull is 17th. Jazzle, the stretch runner, is the last of them all. Three quarters in 10 and 4. And it's Sinister Minister. And here comes Barbaro, the undefeated Barbaro. And he takes the lead as the field turns for home in the Kentucky Derby. Barbaro turns it on. Brother Derek putting in a late run on the far outside, but they're coming to the finish, and it is all Barbaro.
40,000 ponies are born each year, but only 20 thoroughbred three-year-olds make it to the gate in the Kentucky Derby. In their first film, The First Saturday in May, the Hennigan brothers bring you into the real world of horse racing, and Brad and John Hennigan join me now, along with one of the trainers that they profile in the film, Dale Romans. I'm very pleased to welcome them to the show to talk about the film, which opens at Cinema Village this Friday. Hello.
Well, thank you for having us.
Thanks, Leonard.
And Dale?
Yes, how are you?
Where are you now, Dale?
I'm in Louisville, Kentucky.
Oh, I thought you might be in Dubai or something.
Well, we just got back from Dubai a week ago.
When did the Kentucky Derby become the most famous horse race in America? Is this something that goes back a long time?
Actually, Dale would be a good person to talk to, growing up in the shadow of the Twin Spires there in Louisville.
Ever since I've been around, it's been considered the most famous race in the world. But I believe around the turn of the century, in the early 1900s, they really started promoting it as the biggest race in the world, and it's just taken off.
Even bigger than the British Derby?
Well, I think it is. I think you might get some arguments from some British people, but everybody knows about the Kentucky Derby everywhere in the world.
And one of the horses is from Dubai. The Sultan of Dubai enters a horse. Over the years, we've seen horses from France and England and elsewhere. Are they all bred and raised in Kentucky? Or did they all come out of Kentucky
stock? No, I mean, that's the thing is, horse racing is huge all over the world. I mean, as we said, Europe, Japan, there's farms, Australia.
Hong Kong.
I mean, there was a champion horse year before last called Invisor, was from Uruguay. So, and there's actually on Saturday at the Lexington Stakes, which is a Kentucky Derby prep race, it's only 2 weeks out, there's a horse called Tomcito that's running that is from Dale. Where is Tomcito from in South America?
Peru.
No, I don't know. Somewhere in South America.
I believe it's Peru.
Yeah. So they really can come from anywhere. That's the beauty of horse racing. We always say is I think actually Dale said this. You're never going to own the New York Yankees, but you could own a piece of a Derby winner.
And of course, George Steinbrenner has owned some horses as well. Now, this film,
you mentioned Sheikh Mohammed. He spent hundreds of millions of dollars trying to win the Kentucky Derby and hasn't been able to do it yet. And that's the great thing about the game, that everybody has an equal chance.
But you did win the richest purse in the world, didn't you, in the Dubai World Cup?
Yes, in 2005, my stable won the Dubai World Cup, which is a $6 million race. It is the richest race in the world.
Now,
three Kentucky Derbies, but it's nothing like winning the Kentucky Derby or competing in the Kentucky Derby.
Still, I wonder why Dubai? Horse racing isn't big in most of the Middle East, is it?
It's very big in Dubai. Saudi Arabia has horse racing, and if you talk to Sheikh Mohammed, that's where it began. The Arabian horses are, all the thoroughbreds are the direct descendants of only four Arabian horses, and they all came from the Middle East.
Now, Brad, the focus of this film is really on the trainers as much as the horses. Why that approach? Do you think the trainers are the least understood part of the game? We all know about some the owners of some of the big stables, and the jockeys become celebrities. But the trainers, these very colorful characters, all of them, it seems, generally are not known except to the people who really follow the game seriously.
Yeah, and we think that should change. I mean, you know, these guys work their butts off to, you know, they work. There's no off season. They work 365 days a year, 7 days a week. And I think we followed these trainers because growing up as kids, we met all these colorful characters at the racetrack, and it just kind of stuck with us. Our father was a racing official, and these characters were just unbelievable. And you know, we wanted to show the world.
And you wanted to show them all around the world. I mean, you're in the West Coast, the South, here in New York. Do you think the trainers have certain things in common?
Yeah, you know, it was funny, actually, to reference Dale again because he's on the phone. He said the trainers got a kick out of it, too, because they got to see how the other guys train their horses because they're so focused on their barn and their stable of horses and, you know, that was his comment, but I'm sorry, what was the rest of the question?
No, well, just it seemed to me that they all had something in common. These were all right. Gregarious guys, and they were all very, very, I mean, even though they had different personalities, ultimately, I saw a certain kind of person who would get into this.
Right. I mean, as a trainer, you're spinning a lot of plates. I mean, the rest of America is going to tune into the Derby, see a guy in a suit and rooting his horse on, but I mean, you're dealing with a staff. You're running a small business, you know. You're dealing with individuals. You're dealing with jockeys. You're dealing with the jocks' agents. You're dealing with a bunch of owners, if you're lucky enough to have a bunch of owners. I mean, Dale, you know, can probably comment about the spinning plates.
Well, the biggest common denominator, I think, and that you see in the movie is no matter how you're pointing towards the Derby, the one common denominator we all have is everybody loves the racehorses and everybody loves the horse.
And is that it? Is that what got the two of you involved? You said that your father was was he an aqueduct?
He was an official for the New York Racing Association for 37 years. And prior to that, he was from Baltimore. My grandfather was the secretary of the American Trainers Association in Baltimore. So, you know, my father was kind of brought up in the game. He operated the elevator at Timonium Park.
And Dale, you did too.
Yes, I was raised in the game. My father was a trainer, as several people in the movie, second generation or third generation horse people.
And you get the feeling that a lot of people actually get into horse racing because they love the horses so much. People who just present themselves at track and say, hey, I want to do something. I'll clean up after the horse. I'll do whatever I have to do. And then they work their way up. And
that's kind of what we did. I mean, we started our first jobs at the track were you know, during the summer, in between college and high school, we worked at the track, and from scooping ice cream to scooping manure.
They said, Dale, that the trainers looked at the film to see what other trainers were doing. I assume you pretty much all do the same thing, don't you?
Well, I guess we do all have the same concerns and do the same stuff, but you really don't realize it until this film kind of opened my eyes up that I wasn't the only one who had the highs and lows on the backside. Everybody hears about everybody's successes, but you don't hear about the failures or the problems that everybody else has.
Well, only one horse wins, and in the
only
Kentucky Derby, you got 20 horses.
And Dale, what is the number? It's something like if you're a very successful trainer, you lose 80% of the time. Is that correct?
Exactly. If you're at the top of the game, you're going to lose 80% of the time. So you're only winning 20%. That's even bad for a batting average.
So with that in mind, John, when you decided to make this film and follow, I don't know how many horses, we get 6 in the movie.
We followed about 13 altogether.
They were the ones you thought were most likely to qualify?
Well, as we show in the film, and we're trying to demystify horse racing, we're trying to show, like, people know about the Kentucky Derby, but they don't know how horses get there. So we wanted to show it's not a bracketed system like the NCAA tournament, but there is a path to the Derby, and you advance to different prep races, and it kind of separates the wheat from the chaff in terms of the athletes, the talent, you know, whether, you know, these horses. So we went to these prep races, and what we were doing was we were kind of focusing on who we thought would be the best character. I mean, sure, we would want our horses to advance and be great, but, you know, we were really looking at the people, because at the end of the day, this is a movie about people that just happens to be at the racetrack.
And some of the horses do poorly along the way and don't qualify. Did you have a sense from the start that Barbaro had a good shot at it? Because it seemed to me that that was a horse that you kind of started paying attention to later in the process, when you realized that, hey, this horse has a real chance.
It was interesting. I mean, when we were following him, I mean, we picked him up pretty early in the process.
In January. The Holy Bull Stakes at Gulfstream, which is like one of the first of three major prep races in Florida on the trail to the Kentucky Derby.
So fairly early, but no, we didn't have any idea what was to come. And, you know, he was one of the horses we thought was pretty good and then had a shot. But, you know, going into the Derby, all the hype was around Brother Derek, which was the horse from California.
And that's Dan Hendricks' horse. One of the most moving moments in the film is when he gets out of his wheelchair and rides a horse. This is a man who became a paraplegic as an adult after he'd already started training horses.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Brad and Dan have become really good friends, and because Brad was out shooting the horses in California, but I mean, Dan was only less than 2 years he had been in the chair. I mean, so it was still an adjustment period for him. And I think this horse was kind of helping in the healing.
I think so, you know, and it was for him coming from a horse family. His father and grandfather, I mean, his father and uncle were in a two-man, they were stuntmen in horse racing. They used to ride Roman style on top of, not Dale Roman style, but Roman style on top of the horses. And they sold out Madison Square Garden at one point. So I think this was such an adjustment for him. As you know, he led this life of riding motorcycles and to be confined to a wheelchair. But I think he's an unbelievable guy.
Now, Dale, how soon can you spot whether a horse has real potential? Maybe not for the Kentucky Derby, but has real potential.
Well, early on, you can tell if a horse doesn't have potential, and then they start sorting themselves out towards the end of their 2-year-old year as to how far you think they might be able to go. It's funny that they started following two. I know myself and Karen McLaughlin with actually other horses than the ones we ended up with in the Derby as 2-year-olds. So some of them are late bloomers.
Well, your horse did make it to the Derby that year, Sharp Humor. But you knew that he only had maybe not a 1 in 20 chance. But did you just believe that he was going to win?
I thought he was going to run very good. You know, he was the only horse to ever make Barbaro work in his prep before the Kentucky Derby. Barbaro only beat him a neck, and, you know, I thought he was the horse to beat in the Derby. We unfortunately got hurt in the Derby. Sharp Humor fractured his knee, and I think he did it fairly early in the race, so he never really got to show what he could have done.
And a number of horses got hurt that year, obviously. In fact, there's no way you could have known about that tragedy and then the tragedy of Barbaro when you started making this film. But it gives a whole other dimension to the film that I'm sure you didn't imagine you were going to have.
Exactly, Leonard. I mean, there's no way we could have made that up. I mean, you know, after the horse did so well in the Kentucky Derby, you know, people were whispering like superstar.
Triple Crown.
Right.
For the first time in many years.
Right, exactly. The last one was 78, I believe, with Affirmed, 78 or 79, almost 30 years ago. So, you know, people, there's a hunger for that, and this horse winning by so much. So, you know, the 2 weeks between the Derby and the Preakness were a really kind of exciting time, and then for the Preakness to go off, and then what happened, it was just like, you can't write that stuff, you know.
Dale, do you have a horse that you have projected for this year's Derby?
I have a horse, Halo Najee, but only the top 20 money earners get in. He's ranked 24th right now. I believe if there's some defectors and he gets in, we're going to run him.
Defectors, you mean? Well, don't horses then suddenly just have a bad race? We have, in the film, we have a horse that nobody expected. Well, Sharp Humor came in 19th in a race, didn't he? That's your horse. That was your horse. He still made it into the Derby.
He was 19th in the Derby. That's the race he got hurt
in. Yeah.
But, you know, horses get hurt, they get sick, they get all kinds of ailments. When you got 25 of them trying to fight for 20 spots, usually there's 3 or 4 that aren't going to make it.
Have you, the two of you, been following this year's prospects?
Oh, absolutely.
Are you sorry that you're not making another movie?
I mean, we want to do it every year, and we know how to now, so we could. But, I mean, the state of independent film, it's like you have to fight for your film. So we have been just eating, living, and sleeping this. So, but, yeah, there's a horse people are talking about called Big Brown, who, as Dale described, is one of these late bloomers, and he's won his last two races in Florida by like a combined like 20 lengths. Or Dale, what is it? What's Big Brown's?
Oh, it's something like 20 lengths. He's 3 for 3 lifetime.
Yeah, I mean, he's young.
Wow.
Some people say he might have bad feet, but he's looked pretty impressive his last two races. So, you know, you can't discount a horse like that.
And I just want to ask you one more thing about how you divvied up the responsibilities here, because you were covering so many different places. Did one of you go off to shoot one segment while the other shot another one?
Yeah, pretty much we split the country up. If I was in California, John would be in New York. If I was in Arkansas, John would be in Florida. And we basically, you know, we were able to get this great footage because we just had these small little cameras and it was really unobtrusive to the trainers.
Now, we want to tell you that we'll be interviewing Edgar Prado, who was Barbaro's jockey, on Tuesday, May 6th.
Oh, wow.
That's the Tuesday following.
Maybe he will have won the Derby by then. Who is he on? Dale, who is he riding?
Big Brown.
Yeah. Oh. No, is that not DeSormo?
Oh, yeah, DeSormo's Big Brown. I'm sorry. Prado's probably, he had to make his decision today. He had two or three to choose from, and probably Mamba, I would think.
Yeah, Mamba just won the Bluegrass.
And a listener, Dale, we have no time, but a listener wants to know if you're a horse whisperer.
I don't know about a horse whisperer, but I think that there are ways to communicate with them.
And one of the ways seems to be just show them a lot of affection, and everybody seems to want to do that. I want to thank you so much, Dale Rummond, one of America's leading trainers, and Brad and John Hennigan, whose film, The First Saturday in May, opens at Cinema Village this Friday, just a few weeks before the Kentucky Derby this year. Thank you all so much.
Thanks for coming. Thank you. Come support the film, please.